You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle, and this is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, October 23rd, 2019.
You don't know which one of our books is an ex-offender. You don't know which one is transgender. You don't know which one is a rabbi. You don't know which one is going to speak to you about life after death. And so I did that on purpose because that's part of challenging the stereotype.
That was Monroe County Public Library's Bobby Overman, coordinator of this Saturday's Human Book. We'll hear more from Overman later in the program in our community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, scams that target millennials on this week's Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. And tips for smarter grocery shopping from the ins and outs of money, a financial literacy project that will keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, your daily headlines.
The owners of an historic home on West 7th Street in Bloomington are appealing an $83,500 fine for demolishing it. David Holdman and Judy Baker own the home. They had it demolished on September 26th of this year, 13 years after a family member passed away in the home. City staff estimated the home was built in the 1880s and was one of the very few remaining of its kind in Bloomington. Now, despite the home's altered state of upkeep, the Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission had voted to protect the home. Connor Herderick, Historic Preservation Program Manager for the city's Housing and Neighborhood Development Department, said demolishing the home was a radical move and avoidable. Now, most homeowners' requests for demolition permits are granted, but only a few requests are for homes with historic designations. Federal, state, and historic preservation surveys list the 7th Street home for its historic significance. However, the Bloomington City Council hadn't yet voted on whether the home qualified for physical protections. The homeowners were told the house would be protected by interim historic protections until the City Council made a decision. City Attorney Philippa Guthrie has said the fine is based on a home demolition without obtaining a permit.
The City of Bloomington has announced its grand opening of its new Switchyard Park. According to a press release, the park will be unveiled to the public on November 16th and 17th, the largest park project in the city's history. The 57-acre former railroad property stretches from West Grimes Lane to Country Club Road. It features a pavilion, a performance stage, an amphitheater, skate park, community gardens, picnic shelters, and courts for multiple types of sports. Community members are invited to a ribbon-cutting ceremony and program Saturday evening, November 16th, from 6 to 8 p.m. The pavilion opens at 6 p.m. with building tours. The evening culminates with a grand reveal of the lighted park. The grand opening activities continue on Sunday, November 17th, from 11 a.m. through 3 p.m. Free interactive children's activities and live music will be held throughout the day. During Sunday's festivities, Bloomington Parks and Recreation staff will provide demonstrations, offer equipment for play, and facilitate a three-point shot contest. Also on Sunday, visitors can tour the new Bloomington Police Department substation, a remodeled former railroad yard operations building at the park's northernmost end at Grimes Lane. The City of Bloomington purchased most of the land for the Switchyard Park in 2009. According to the release, the $34 million project was funded with revenue from the city's tax increment finance districts.
Early voting began Monday for City of Bloomington municipal elections. City Council Districts 2 and 3 are the only contested races, and only voters living in those districts can cast a ballot in those races. The towns of Ellettsville and Steinsville are not holding municipal elections this year because no town positions had more than one candidate. Democrat Sue Scambelluri and Republican Andrew Gunther are competing to represent Bloomington City Council District 2. Democrat Ron Smith is running against two independent candidates, Nick Pappas and Marty Speckler, for Bloomington City Council District 3 seat. If you live in either of these districts and want to vote early, you can cast your ballot at Election Central, 401 West 7th Street in downtown Bloomington. Early voting hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., 9 to 4 on Saturday through November 4th. Voters who prefer to wait until Election Day to vote have to go to the poll location that corresponds to their precinct. The polls will be open 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on November 5th. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits Kitchen features local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
Bobby Overman is in her second year coordinating the Human Library event at the Monroe County Public Library. WFHB correspondent Jake Jacobson talked to Overman to learn more about the project, which is focused on creating dialogue and understanding between people.
This Saturday, the Monroe County Public Library will host its second annual Human Library. The Human Library Organization, whose headquarters is in Denmark, helps organize Human Library events in more than 80 countries. The Human Library is an event that allows marginalized people, and those often the target of stereotypes, to volunteer as human books. These books are then available to readers or participants in the event, who can check out a book and have a one-on-one conversation with them for up to 20 minutes. Bobby Overman is a librarian and nonprofit center specialist at the Monroe County Public Library. Overman, who is organizing the event in its second year, explains how she discovered the Human Library and what about it caught her attention.
So I heard about it on a TED Talk. So I probably heard about it probably a year or so before we decided to do it. I just thought, well, how fantastic is that? That people could have conversations in a safe and civil environment and ask questions that they might feel either uncomfortable or they're just not sure if they can ask those questions. And at first I thought, well, will I be able to get anybody who wants to answer these questions? You know, I mean, it's a big deal to sit there and explain to somebody what being bipolar is, or what having a traumatic brain injury is. But I did. Those are my books this year. But last year, we had 12 books of different titles and subjects. And the libraries were all about inclusivity and diversity and having a space for those types of conversations. So I thought it was a perfect fit.
The Human Library's goal is to encourage people to challenge their own stereotypes and prejudices by letting them speak with people who have those experiences. Overman notes that the Human Library is also an opportunity for people who are often the targets of these stereotypes to actually share their experience with others.
One of our books, and she's back again this year, has Tourette syndrome. And most people have a very specific thing in mind when they think of somebody with Tourette syndrome. And she likes to break that barrier and say, you know what, mine doesn't manifest itself in the way that you might think it does. And so people were really excited coming away with, God, I didn't know. I didn't know all that about Tourette syndrome. And my book said, some of them said, this is like therapy. It's like 4 hours of therapy. I get to like tell my story and answer questions, and you know, which I think is really brave of them. One of our books was Pagan Witchcraft, and there's all sorts of stereotypes and biases, and she's very open about it, and she loves speaking about it, and so she was thrilled to be able to just tear down some of those myths about what it is to be, what it is to be a pagan witchcraft, you know. And another one of our books, and she's coming back, is Bipolar. And she doesn't speak about it a lot because she said the minute she did, then people would automatically think, oh, okay, I know what that means. Or they would be like, oh, okay, we don't want to talk about it. And she's like, no, I want to talk about it. I want to, because I think a lot of times people perhaps know somebody who's bipolar. They just don't know they know somebody who's bipolar. And they don't want to ask any questions. And in this space, you can't ask rude questions. You know, we don't allow our books to be treated poorly. You have to bring them back in good condition when you check them out. But they are expecting those tough questions, you know, like, what does it mean to be bipolar? Or when you say you have Tourette syndrome, what is that? Like, what does your tick, how does that manifest itself?
The Human Library is meant to host difficult conversations, which can be uncomfortable to start. Luckily, Overman says, the books have a solution.
So all my books have 3 starter questions, just to kind of break the ice in case somebody's like, okay, I don't know what kind of questions I can ask them. And so I ask my books to give me 3 starter questions, either questions that they've always been asked or questions that they wish people would ask them, to, you know, because they, like, perhaps somebody doesn't want to ask them this question, but that's exactly what my participants, those are the questions they want to be asked, so right, they can explain it a little further.
Last year, the Human Library's theme was Don't Judge a Book by Its Cover. This year, the theme is Unjudge Someone. In support of this year's theme, this year's books are not labeled. Overman says that this is to help avoid the initial stereotypes that many of the Human Library's books encounter.
All our books are in the atrium, and there's no labels on the table. So when you walk in, you don't know. I'll use some examples from this year's group of human books. You don't know which one of our books is an ex-offender. You don't know which one is transgender. You don't know which one is a rabbi. You don't know which one is going to speak to you about life after death. Because there's no, you'll know once you come up to our table and ask to check out that book. And so I did that on purpose because that's part of challenging the stereotypes. People think, oh, I could probably look and tell you which one is the ex-offender. Then you go and sit down and you're like, my goodness. Well, and now I'm going to speak to this person who maybe looks just like, you know, my sister or my cousin or my mother, whatever.
Human libraries are hosted all over the world, and their impact varies from host to host. In Bloomington, Overman believes that both Hoosiers who volunteer as books and people who come to the event as readers both have a lot to gain from an annual human library.
Part of it is just giving a voice to people who may not know how to start a conversation or don't have a platform or they don't want to go on Facebook. They want to have this one-on-one interaction. So that's part of it, you know, from the human book standpoint, just giving people a way to speak who may be really hesitant. Like some of my books, you know, they thought about it. They said, you know what, I don't really talk about this, but I really want to talk about it. And some of my friends might know, but, you know, it's not like I wander up to strangers and say, hey, you know, would you like to talk about Tourette syndrome? So in this space, it gives them that. And even though there's many people who think they know everything there is to know about being an ex-offender or being homeless or being bipolar, but maybe they're spot on. You know, maybe they have family members. But you know what? Even if you do have a family member, that story is going to be different than this person's story. And you just get a different perspective, I think, you know. So that's what I'm hoping. And because the library is, you know, our mission statement is about diversity, inclusivity, I just think this falls right into that. And honestly, it's so much fun. I mean, it's just so much fun to see people just having these one-on-one conversations, you know. So I do think from both sides, you're going to get something, because you can't possibly know everybody's experience with being homeless. And I do think there are a lot of misconceptions still about being homeless or being an ex-offender or being bipolar, you know. So this just, if you're interested in just talking to somebody one-on-one and just getting one more perspective on that, that's what this gives you an opportunity to do.
According to its website, the Human Library was created in Copenhagen in the spring of 2000. Since its inception, the Human Library Organization has expanded operations on 6 continents and hosts events in over 80 countries around the world. The Monroe County Public Library's Human Library is this Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m. in the atrium of the main library. If you are interested in volunteering as a human book in future Human Library events, you can fill out an application on the library's website at mcpl.info/gen-info/human-library-book-application. For WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003. And on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, the ins and outs of money, providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing.
It's the ins and outs of money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Hi, I'm Christina, and this is the ins and outs of money. Want to cut down on your food expenses? Here are 14 quick tips for saving money at the grocery store. 1. Pick a day every week to check out the grocery store ads in your local paper and make a weekly meal plan according to what is on sale. Then consolidate your visit to each store into one trip to save gas. 2. Create a comprehensive grocery list for your household's food needs. Start by keeping a list of things as you run out of them, as well as anything else that comes to mind, but also list all the ingredients you need for the menus for the week ahead, based on your meal plans and the sale items you find. And if you want to get extreme, take an inventory of everything you actually have on hand and build your meal plans and your shopping list from there. 3. Once you create your shopping list, stick to it. Your list is not a guideline or a suggestion or even a goal. It's a mandate from your ideal money smart self. So list your needs to include everything you'll need at the store for your planned meals, from the eggs to the salt to the chocolate bar to the kale and the frozen apple juice. Do not deviate from the list. Sticking to it will not only take the impulse out of your shopping, but it will save you time and force you to be that much more intentional in your planning. 4. It's old advice, but it's true. Don't shop when you're hungry. Eat something with some protein in it before you leave the house so you aren't tempted by your tummy at the store. 5. When comparison shopping, go beyond milk, bread, bananas, and eggs. Those are the items customers most often compare in different store ads, but if you want a better idea of the sales cycle at the stores where you shop, add a couple more items to your price comparisons each week. 6. Shop in the middle of the supermarket first. The produce section is great for healthy eating. It's supposed to put you in a good mood, and when you're in a good mood, you spend more, right? So try starting in the middle of the store, or try some reverse psychology by shopping in the reverse direction from the store's layout. 7. Pay attention to the very bottom and the very top of the store shelves. Food companies often pay stores to stock their products at eye level, and guess who that cost is passed on to? You can save money by checking prices on the high and low shelves, or better yet, just look for the generic or store brands for extra savings. 8. When you look at price tags in the store, also look for the price per unit on an item. The price per unit is listed next to the total item price on the shelf tag in most bigger stores, and it tells you what you're actually paying for something relative to the size of its packaging. 9. Buy in bulk when it makes sense. Foods are usually cheaper when purchased in large quantities, and those that are slower to perish, cooking oils, sugar, and dry pasta, or that freeze well, like butter or meats, can be used for months. Compare cost per unit of those giant packages you see on the shelves, and learn how to weigh and label the food you find in the big tubs in the bulk aisle. The cost may seem high up front, but you'll save big in the long run. 10. Take a closer look at the 10 for $10 type promotions. Sometimes you don't actually have to buy all 10 items to get the sale price per item, and it's actually not unheard of for a 10 for $10 sale to actually increase the price per item. So always double check that deals like these are truly deals. 11. Take advantage of a basic rule of economics. Time is money. The more time that goes into producing something, the more it's likely to cost. In general, that means by buying foods in their natural instead of more processed states, you're taking the time it takes to prepare them upon yourself, which saves you money. So for instance, buying a whole chicken and cutting it up at home, or cooking with dried beans and lentils as opposed to cans, or baking your own bread, these methods take a little more time, but the overall cost savings can be significant. 12, if you see previously frozen in the meat display case, just buy it frozen. You're often just paying extra for the store to thaw the meat and arrange it on display. 13, always make sure that the barcode on the shelf tag and the packaging on the product you're looking at match. You might focus on a good price you see on a shelf tag only to realize later that the tag is for a smaller size or even a completely different item. 14, don't forget that specialty stores like Asian and Hispanic markets or even local farmers markets can offer big savings on certain items. Especially keep an eye out for bargains on produce, herbs and spices, and bulk items while you're there. Shopping outside of your comfort zone is not only money smart, it can be a lot of fun to discover new dishes for your weekly menus based on what you find. Committing to shopping smarter for your groceries is one of the best things you can do for your household budget. You'll eat better, for less money, and feel better knowing you're taking control of an area of spending that's among the biggest money pitfalls for American consumers.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library, and Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library.info.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
If you're younger than 30 years old, I've probably got a surprise for you. Now, we've talked a lot on Better Beware about scammers and swindlers targeting older people, Social Security scams, tax collection scares, fake kidnapping cons. But a surprising percentage of scam victims are millennials, young people. According to the Federal Trade Commission, millennials have reported being swindled out of almost $450 million in the last 2 years. $71 million of those losses came from being swindled one way or another while shopping online. Young folks are twice as likely as people over 40 to have trouble buying something from a website. Being taken in by a fake email, phishing, spear phishing, phony emails from your bank, all the ones we've been reporting, younger folks are 77% more likely to report losing money to a scam that starts with an email than older people are. One of the most common kinds that young folks fall for are the fake employment scams, the ones that offer what seems like a dream job. Good pay, maybe you can work at home on your computer, set your own hours, and then they want you to pay them for training. Or they rope you in on a fake check deal. Fake check scams from all sources are hitting millennials far more than older folks. These are the ones where a con artist sends you a phony check. You deposit it and spend some, or send some back, usually by wire transfer, before the check bounces and you're stuck for the full amount. Young folks are 93% more likely to get hit with these con games. And social media turns out to be the most effective way of all for con artists to hook a sucker. The Better Business Bureau reports that most people actually hang up on phone scams and delete email scams these days. In other words, they don't even engage the fraudster. But con jobs that start on social media engage over 90% of their targets, and over half of them report losing money. Young folks are still, of course, more likely than older people to use social media. Back in the 19th century, humorist Josh Billings said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years." So if you're under 30, you really need to beware. It can take time to learn the most important lesson of all. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. But you don't have to be a victim. 20th century comedian Joey Lewis put it this way: you are only young once, and if you work it right, once is enough. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sarah Vaughn and Sydney Foreman. Our feature was produced by Jake Jacobson. The Ins and Outs of Money was produced by Ryan Stacy and Christina Wiltsey at the Monroe Public Library. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish.
Sydney Foreman and Dan Withard engineered today's show. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadeke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.